This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
All right, we talked to Michael McCann, Sportico legal advisor who is up on Capitol Hill, testifying and discussing name, image, and likeness. We discussed Florida State coming up a bit short yesterday in the national championship game. The college football playoff expansion, potentially a starting point. It's been leaked out all week that 12 could be the very number. And yesterday, even more details, Wes. There's a lot to cover here. I would just say in general form, I gave you the quote from Greg Sankey earlier today, which I think is the one. But it's a starting point. I mean, people are going to go crazy and ballistic and the pros, the cons, and all that kind of stuff, and that's all fine and good. But beginning next week, late next week in Chicago, the management committee will get together and take this basically working group proposal, starting point, and kick this thing around and eat it up left and right. What's good? What's bad? What's indifferent? Do we move forward? But it's going to have people talking. But as opposed to 4-6, yep. 4-8, 4-12 is going to be where we get started from. And that is intriguing by itself, in my opinion.
You're not surprised they went to 12, are you?
I am. I got to tell you, because I just really? Thought, okay. Yeah, because, you know, you heard, hey, let's go to 6. Let's walk before we run, you know, a couple buys for teams 1 and 2. And then you heard 8. Now let's get everybody tied in. And again, the working committee worked on 63 different scenarios. I mean, we're not going to waste your time going through all the scenarios on that thing. But I was a bit surprised that 12 was the number. But the more I read and hear, I kind of get it. It's like, okay, you want to be everything to everybody here. If you want to be one of the 12, get better. Hey, we know Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State are going to be great. And maybe that's what it eventually turns out to be anyhow. And if it is, so be it. If they're the best teams, I want to see the best teams play. But you want people to be engaged in the college football regular season and certainly the postseason. And in my opinion, if you happen to get rid of some more bowl games, I got no problem with that. I've been beating that drum for God knows how long. I mean, we got 40-some-odd bowl games. Right. I know our company that we work for basically owns and operates a bunch of them. But if you're going to try to make the playoff work, you know what? There may be some folks on the curb that are sitting there going, hey, whatever happened to us? But I kind of like the concept on the whole. The biggest concern I have is, you know what? The two teams that are playing for a championship could be playing 17 games in a season. That's a ton. That's a ton of football. And I've already seen too many coaches and players at the end of a 15-game season, whether they won the championship or not, I mean, we're exhausted. 17's a bunch. But, again, there's going to be pros and cons here. So there we go.
All right, let's show you kind of the broad stroke outline of this, if we can. We'll give you a graphic for television. We'll bullet point it for you on radio. 12-team playoff is the proposal. It would include the 6 highest-ranked conference champions and then the 6 highest-ranked teams per the selection committee. That's why I said at the top I still think the regular season is impactful from week 1 all the way through the end. The 4 highest-ranked conference champions would get first-round byes. That is a critical piece of information right there. Notice it says conference champions. Then the first round would be played at the higher seeds stadium. Thus, the elimination of some neutral sites and a reward, to be honest with you, for those teams that have played a tougher schedule, maybe even won their league, whatever the case may be, to get in to the 12-team playoffs. So that's the bullet point. Now, why did I make such a big deal of the 4 highest-ranked conference champions would get selected 1 through 4 and get first-round byes? Because Notre Dame right now is ineligible for a conference championship. So is BYU. Pack, that part makes this also very interesting from that whole sidebar situation with those two institutions in particular, I think.
Well, listen, if they want to join a conference, they can. If they don't and want to be independent, good for them. I mean, I don't have an issue with any of that. I know people scream to the high heavens, they need to be in a league. Well, if they want to join it, let them join it. If they don't want to be independent, go for it. This is a, listen, Notre Dame has made the college football playoff as an independent. They've also made the college football playoff as a member of the ACC in football. Notre Dame knows their business better than anybody else in the country. So let them conduct their business. If they want to join, great. If they don't, fine. Whatever. I thought Jack Swarbrick yesterday was asked a question regarding, well, does this mean that Notre Dame under the current situation could never have a first-round bye? The answer is yes. True. Brought to you by Dish. But he also said it also means I don't ever have to listen to, well, we don't have a 13th data point and et cetera, et cetera. We could still get in. That's to me, this is why the proposal that was kicked around that folks now have a chance to read, there's a lot of things I really like about 12 that I really never thought of 12 ahead of time. I thought 8 would be the natural progression going from 4 and to try to tie in the group of 5 and Notre Dame if they want to be independent. But 12 makes a lot of sense. And for people that don't like it, I would just tell you this. Well, we love football in this country, don't we? And we really love football when the best teams are playing, don't we? We do love college football on home sites, don't we? I mean, all of those should be yes, yes, yes. And this proposal, assuming it goes through, again, it's only a starting point, kind of covers all of that. Notre Dame could be independent if they want. If they want to join the ACC, they can do that too. Great. You got home field college football playoff games. Teams seeded 5 through 8, host teams 9 through 12. How sensational would that be? Well, last year, if this plan were in place, we would have had games last year like Coastal Carolina at Notre Dame. Now, just that game alone to me kind of encompasses what everybody has screamed about regarding the college football playoff. The little guy doesn't have a chance. Well, here's Coastal Carolina at Notre Dame, maybe the most esteemed traditional football location on the planet. Coastal Carolina at Notre Dame would have been a playoff game last year. Isn't that what we've been talking about with the folks that have hated the fact, oh, there's only, it's so inclusive, there, nobody else has a chance. That game by itself, as a playoff game, home field advantage, 80,000 in December. Here comes Coastal Carolina, the upstart from the Grand Strand. How cool a story would that have been? Now, would the game have been good? Great. I got no idea. That's why we play. But, man, isn't that the snapshot of what people want the playoff to be? The answer is yes. And if people say, oh, it's only going to be Bama and Clemson again. Well, guess what? If they're the two best teams, don't we want to see the two best teams play? I mean, if it happens to be the same, yeah, could it get monotonous? Perhaps, if you're not a Bama or Clemson fan. But you know what? As a college football fan, a college basketball fan, college softball fan, I want to see the two best teams play for a national championship. And if you could give me a Cinderella story on the path to determining a title, awesome. So again, I kind of like what I've read so far with the 12-team format. Now, whether we get there or not, I got no idea. But like I said, and so did Greg Sankey yesterday, he said this is not a dictate. It's a fulfillment of an assignment. They were part of the working group. That's exactly what they did. Job well done.
All right. You mentioned the 17 games. It goes to say here that if you play in a conference, you're going to play your 12 regular season. You're going to play in a conference championship game, whether you win or lose for 13. Then potentially you would play 4 more to get to 17. Now, the first round buys, they would clearly have the week off. That's a huge deal. However, they grid this on the calendar. Pack, I start looking at this and start thinking to myself, okay, I can see where 17 games would be regarded as a lot. But to me, the juice of the regular season is the one thing that the college football playoff has really, really helped. I think college football is impactful from week one all the way through. Can you have a slip and still succeed? Sure you can. Can you have two? Well, it's hard in the CFP format. But I still think the regular season with this has some leverage to it. It's a really important. I mean, games in week one are going to have some degree of impact. Will you be able to lose one or two? Maybe so down the road. But I still think the framework of college football gets kept. What we become accustomed to with the 4-team playoff would be alive in principle for the 12-team playoff, and I think that's good. And you know what? Jamie Chadwell at Coastal Carolina, Josh Heupel at UCF. The Cinderella still going to get a crack at the ball in this deal. And that's what we heard. Remember when UCF and Danny White, the AD now at Tennessee, declared UCF the national champion, slapped it across the press box, the whole bit, at their stadium. Well, guess what, guys? You're not getting the bailout button anymore. Remember when P.J. Fleck was, coaching? Was it Western Michigan, rowing the boat, right? He was going to get a chance, and they went to the Cotton Bowl. Well, guess what? P.J. Fleck be in the playoffs now, okay? He'd be in the playoffs. Now, he might have a road game at Florida or a road game at A&M or whatever the case may be, but he gets a chance at the prize, not just the really nice swag bag to go play in the Cotton Bowl. And guess what? That's part of the deal. You've actually helped these games where we saw Carolina and Texas A&M play this year in the Orange Bowl. That game now factors into the sequence of what the Final Four is. That's where college football really wins in this proposal. Those games, Pac, where we saw Carolina lose, what, Javonte Williams, Michael Carter, De'Ami Brown, they lost all those guys this year, right? Going into an Orange Bowl game. First time they've been to an Orange Bowl in, what, 70 years, 80 years, right? Something like that. Carolina had a situation where you lost some of your heavy artillery. Would they lose those guys now? I'm not sure they would, because you're in the game. You're in the big game. I think that's where this is different, too. I really do, and I think that just fortifies what you get in the regular season.
Well, I've never understood why people thought the playoff expansion would kill the regular season. I thought if it was positioned correctly, it would enhance it. In my opinion,
correct,
based on what I've seen with this proposal, I think it just makes your regular season that much more important. Every week is always going to be important. And here's the other thing. We're going to get into games in late October into November – assuming this goes through, that guess what? These games are really still critical. You still have a chance, even if you're ranked 20th in the country, to get into the dance. In the past, quite frankly, you're really on the outside looking in and needed a miracle at best in case everybody lost in front of you, which you knew wasn't going to happen. So again, there's a lot of things about this that I really, really like. Now, whether we can get to the finish line, I don't know. I'll go back again to Greg Sankey's comment that, we've got to remember the TV hasn't had a say yet, and TV always has a say. Trust me on this, and Sankey's 1,000% right. You know, you can come up with the greatest idea in the world. Everybody can be on board, but if you can't figure out a way to generate more money off of it, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So it's just a starting point, but I kind of like where it's starting from, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
All right, I got one other thing I'm going to add here when we go to break. Remember how we kind of banged around scheduling? You know, yesterday at the end of the show, we talked about, what, Alabama, Boston College playing.
Yeah, you don't like it. You don't like it.
10-year? Yeah, well,
31-34 for Bama, BC.
That's it. We can fix scheduling now, too, kids. We get a 2-year run-up to this. We can fix some things. We can get everybody playing maybe the same number of conference games.
Why are you worried about that?
Maybe the same.
Wait a minute. Why are you so worried about the same? Because I don't think that's relevant at all. I don't. I think every league should determine.
If you start comparing notes, I think everybody ought to play some of the same structure.
No, listen. You know, the leagues aren't equal. The leagues are not equal. I mean, they're not. I mean, if everybody had the same power strength, I'm with you. Okay, cool. But the leagues are not equal. So I disagree with you on that. I mean, hey, if the ACC and the SEC, I'll do what I just said. Let the leagues determine who their champion is. I mean, what works in the ACC may not work for the Pac-12. What works in the SEC may not work for the Big Ten. That's fine. Great. Determine your own champion. Schedule your non-conference accordingly. If your league is down, you should probably go schedule teams of note in your non-conference. If your league is a beast, maybe you don't have to jump on non-conference teams because you're already getting tested enough during your regular season. I disagree with you on that.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham. It's a Friday. The college football playoff expansion is a major topic. We got super regionals going on. Many thanks to Michael McCann, a legal analyst breaking down image and likeness, who was testifying up on the Hill. There's a lot of stuff going on. And Gary Gate, by the way, the new men's lacrosse coach at Syracuse, is going to join us coming up here in about 10 minutes or so, Wes.
The ACC, under the current format, has had Clemson appear in the college football playoff 6 times. Florida State obviously appeared in it the first year. Notre Dame, technically at the time a member of the ACC, appeared in it last year. That's 8, tying the Southeastern Conference. Of the 28 teams that have appeared in the college football playoff, the ACC and the SEC have the lead in terms of number of teams that have appeared. That's a good thing. Even in the 12 format, you would like the chances of those two leagues. And let's take a look at 2020, and we'll kind of plug it into this proposal just so you can get a visual on this, because I think it's interesting to look at kind of how all this would work. And one of the big changes is Oklahoma would go to a 4 seed. Notre Dame would drop to a 5 because Oklahoma won the Big 12 pack. So automatically Notre Dame, as proposed, would fall back into a what you would call a first-round game.
Well, that's why I used the example of Notre Dame-Coastal Carolina last segment, because it would encompass everything that people have screamed about regarding the college football playoff, that the little guy doesn't have a shot, and maybe you lose something by not having games on college campuses. Well, if Gist's proposal were in play last year, you would have had Coastal Carolina in South Bend, Indiana, in December in a home field playoff game. Enough said. Mm-hmm. Texas A&M, Indiana, Florida, Iowa State. I mean, Cincinnati, Georgia is actually the game we got in the Peach Bowl. And by the way, that game would have been at Cincinnati. That would have been of note.
Yeah, it would have.
Georgia at Cincinnati in December. Like I said, on the surface, if we can pull this off, and ESPN comes off the hip and says, hey, you know what, from a rights fee, it makes sense, and financially everybody's happy and good to go, I don't know how a college football fan would not enjoy this. I got to be honest with you. You got a little bit of everything. The regular season's important. Winning your conference championship's important. The quote-unquote little guys got a chance if they're good enough. You got home field playoff games. You have an extension where all of a sudden New Year's Day is a big deal again in college football. There's a lot of check marks for me going through this proposal that's like, man, that's kind of cool. Kind of like it. Wouldn't mind seeing it. Would be cool. So I just hope they can pull it off. Let's hope that it can happen.
Yeah. A couple of things here. We already told you about the ACC and the SEC having the lead in terms of number of teams that have qualified for the college football playoff. If you want to do these brackets, and you can go back several years, 2015, the ACC would have had 3 teams in the bracket: Clemson, Florida State, and North Carolina. Tim Beray, of course, one of the greatest ever to do stuff like this, said in the proposed format had been in place since 2014, 15 3-loss teams would have gotten into the playoff, including 4 in 2016 and 2018. How about that? Now, it introduces the – and that's why I still think the regular season counts. Show me that, and when Tim tweeted that yesterday, I thought, there we go. That's more for the regular season to digest, Pack. Every week stays impactful, just like it does now. I don't see the trade-off in the regular season in this that some people talked about yesterday, because the field gets bigger. I don't see that.
I'm with you. Here's the other thing. Every year, the college football playoff, as we know it, once you have 2 losses, you're out. You've been out. There's not been a single 2-loss team make the college football playoff. So you can't tell me how many teams have huge hopes. All of a sudden, they get to middle of October, halfway during the year, they got 2 losses, and any thought and dream that you had of being in the playoff is over. Well, if this new proposal was in play, that's not the case at all. You could have 2 losses in the middle of October, and you still have reason to play and play hard the rest of the year, because you still have a chance to get in the college football playoff. Yep. So, again, I think the regular season gets enhanced. I never bought into the, well, if you expand, the regular season just doesn't mean anything. That's ridiculous. That's an absolutely ridiculous comment. So, again, like I said, on the surface, I like it. I do.
All right. Brett in Florida joining Packer in Durham. Brett, welcome to the show.
Watch you guys every single morning, so I can say that it's the best show on television, and both of you just do an outstanding job. So I just want to say thank you for that. It's honestly the best show in the morning.
Wow.
I do want to say the one thing I'm kind of getting fed up with is this always giving in to Notre Dame. In my opinion, Notre Dame should have no access to the playoff until they join a conference, because essentially they have an unfair advantage in that they don't have the rivalries. They don't have basically what you have to have in the league. And they always, the committees always end up trying to give them some kind of a leeway. Like, well, they played a really tough schedule. Well, so does everybody else.
Brett, let me count. Can I counter? Is that okay with you?
Yeah, you go right ahead.
All right. Let me put my Notre Dame hat on a second. All right, we're not in the league. You're right about that. But you know what? You can't say we don't have rivalries, because every time we show up at somebody's doorstep, we're your biggest game. And, oh, by the way, we play nothing but Power 5 teams. We're not going to sugarcoat somebody from the football championship subdivision on our schedule. We play people every single week. In fact, we will play as many football bowl subdivision teams as anybody else that you want to put up against us.
I understand that, but a lot of the teams they play aren't very good. So, in my opinion, playing North Dakota State the last 7 years would have been better than playing. They play Navy some years. That's not a tough game. Come on.
Well, now, if you want to wait. If you want to go down that rabbit hole, you know what? You pick a league, and I'll give you four or five doormats. You pick a Power 5 league, and I'll give you four or five that I'd sit there and go, please, you mean to tell me this week's game against Vanderbilt is going to cause me a headache? I mean, seriously, and I don't mean to pick on Vandy, but you know who you are.
And I think, Brett, what you're talking about is that Notre Dame seemingly – the way this was constructed – Notre Dame got a spot at the table. They got a spot at the table to the BCS. They got a spot in the table in the design of the CFP. Why? Because the other commissioners recognized, and I think it was Mike Slide that said this. I could be wrong. Could have been Jim Delaney. The Notre Dame impact, the practicality of their television package, the practicality of their brand, you wanted Notre Dame at the table. Now, let me say this. And I'm not defending the castle here on this. Notre Dame not being able to qualify for a top four seed and their AD sitting in that room as part of this working group pack, that's pretty strong. That's to tell you that Notre Dame would then have to play. And Jack Swarbrick came out and said it yesterday. Well, I don't want anybody to say, you know, we didn't play this or that. Okay, fine, yeah. Because Notre Dame didn't get that top four bye. Notre Dame in its current situation has no chance at a top four seed in this deal. And Pac, I'm going to be honest with you. That's a big deal to me yesterday. That is a deal there that's, you know, Notre Dame has to think about it now. And I'm not sure going into any of this, anybody thought they would have to think about it. And now they do. In my opinion, is it worth 5 years from now, 10 years from now, being in a league if we're going to be good enough in football to avoid that game that we would potentially have to play in exchange for a conference championship game? And, oh, by the way, knowing that you could go to that conference championship game, potentially lose and still be in the deal.
Well, like I said earlier, Notre Dame's made the college football playoff as we know it as an independent and as a member of a conference. And, you know, they know their business better than any of us. And if they feel that, hey, our independent status gives us the ability to still have a relationship with ACC games and still be able to go to the West Coast and play a Stanford, play a Southern California, jump on a team in the Midwest from the Big Ten because we can appease to our fan base from coast to coast, hey, that's what works for Notre Dame. Does that work for Florida State? No, but Florida State doesn't look to be an independent. So, you know, nothing is going to be a perfect fit. What works for the ACC doesn't necessarily work for the Big 12. That's why I disagree with the conference games being 8-8, 9-9. Hey, you do what you have to do to determine your champion and position yourself to be better. And so I have no issue at all. And if Notre Dame says, listen, we're willing to give up the opportunity to be one of the top four teams if we stay independent, well, that's what you got to do. Now, does that mean it precludes them from being in the playoff? No. If they're good enough and they can go 11-1, 12-0, and be one of the top 12 ranked teams in the country, hey, they're going to be in. And, you know, whether you love them or hate them, I got news for you. You will pay attention to Notre Dame. Yeah. Whether you will love to watch them get beat by 40 in a playoff game or whether they're winning the national championship, Notre Dame's one of those schools that attracts eyeballs. It's good for television. And guess why that's important? Because TV's writing a check. I keep telling you. Yeah. We come up with the greatest idea in the world, but if somebody doesn't buy it, you got nothing. So I'm all for Notre Dame's position. If they want to be independent, good for them. They want to join the league, awesome. Yep. I'm good either way.
Real quick, their schedule for 21 features Toledo, Navy, and I want to make sure I got all this right. Toledo and Navy and Cincinnati, who are non-Power Fives. Cincinnati's more like a Power Five, though, based on their success.
They'll be a top 10 team.
But though they do not play, they do not play an FCS team. So there you go. Toledo and Navy are their two, you know, group of fives, if you will, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I know this right, much, Matt, Wes. I was going to say the year after Notre Dame, if I'm not mistaken, plays both Ohio State and Clemson. So, I mean, you know, when people yak about Notre Dame's schedule, say whatever you want. When you're an independent, you can play anybody you want, but they're going to go play 12 Power 5 teams, if you will. I mean, they're going to go play real big-time teams. So, you know, everybody's going to have three or four where you go, it's not a tough game. All right, great, whatever. Yeah. Nobody's immune to that.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Friday. Before we switch gears and head up to Central New York for a second, I do want to go back to the caller a second ago talking about Notre Dame's schedule. And Wes, you mentioned the non-Power Fives on that list, which was Toledo, Navy, and Cincinnati. Cincinnati will probably be a preseason top 10, top 15 team. Navy, you know, so I don't think anybody gets excited about playing Navy. They can give you a headache. But you know what? Everybody else on that list, Purdue, Southern Cal, Wisconsin, Stanford, opening up at Florida State, North Carolina's on the schedule this year, tying into those ACC teams. If you don't think that's a schedule, then you're fooling yourself. Just saying. You're fooling yourself.
Well, and here's the other thing I would add to folks who are, you know, Notre Dame in or out. This relationship with the ACC, yeah, there's a rotation of games where they go through the conference as part of their schedule every year. But remember, your strength as a football conference could impact how Notre Dame does.
No
question.
That's
a good thing. For you to send teams to play Notre Dame and to potentially beat Notre Dame, that's a good thing for your league.
Right.
I mean, you know, no matter which way you fall on this, and that's why I've sometimes been like, are you, you know, when folks come up to me and say, well, the Notre Dame thing, I don't like the Notre Dame thing. And I'm like, okay. What's bad about it? Where's the loss in it for either party, quite frankly? Because if your league is getting better in football, it'll be reflected in the performances your league has in that game among its other conference games. So anyway, nonetheless, it's food for thought down the road as much as anything else too. So
totally agree. All right, next guest, he's been on with us before. He's now the new men's lacrosse coach at a place called Syracuse, where it matters. It is a big deal in Central New York. Gary Gate joins us. We'll get him up here front and center. Coach, first of all, congratulations. I know that there's been a kind of a crazy couple weeks, not only the performance on the field, which has been great with the women's side, and now the opportunity to coach the men's side. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. It has been a crazy couple weeks, you know, from going to a championship weekend to, you know, getting back and having things happen pretty quickly and the opportunity open up and to have a chance to coach where I played is just amazing. And for the team I played for, I'm fired up.
Gary, I got to imagine the emotions here in the last couple of weeks have also kind of run the gamut as well, right?
Absolutely, you know, to leave a program that I've been working for 14 years, and these young ladies are just amazing young student athletes, and to have to walk away from that. But the good thing is that I'll be right down the hall, and I'll still have a lot of things that I need to do with the women's team and help them as best I can, and do what I can to make sure that both of us win national championships.
Listen, the standard of Syracuse lacrosse is about as high as it can get, men's or women's side. From now that you're in charge of the men's program, what do you need to do to get back in terms of the elite status? And I say that not that you've fallen off the cliff, because let's be honest, Syracuse was in the playoffs this year. But what gets Syracuse back in the conversation? And guess what? We're going to win the national championship.
You know, I think it's just, you know, a couple players here or there. It's developing that chemistry again, that championship caliber chemistry on the field, and really elevating the style of play to the way Syracuse is known to play. And that's a little bit flashier, making spectacular plays and developing player of the year type players. And that's what we're going to be focused on next year. And hopefully we'll be able to do something quickly.
Gary, I look at and I one time heard Anson Dorrance talk about this, the women's soccer coach at North Carolina, who originally in Chapel Hill, as Mark knows, was not only coaching women, he was also coaching the men's team. And he talked one time at length about the psychology of coaching women and then the psychology of coaching guys. Do you feel like you put one book on the shelf and take another book off the shelf now going from one side of the hall to the other there?
You know, a little bit. You know, it's definitely you push the buttons a little differently, and I think we'll compete in a different way. So you definitely got to change your style of coaching, and I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's been a few years since I've coached the men, and it'll be a nice little change, and I'll get back to pushing those buttons on these guys and getting them to play their best.
Gary, it seems like winning a national championship, really on either side, but we'll concentrate on the men since you're now in charge at Syracuse. It seems like winning a national championship now is harder than it's ever been before, given the fact that, number one, more players, more teams, more interest, the sport's on fire, and people have taken notice and said, guess what, we're going to invest in this sport and let it rip. It just seems like on the surface, it's harder now than ever before.
It definitely is. You know, the talent pool of players that we're drawing from just keeps increasing every year at the high school level. So it creates some equality on the field, which makes it much tougher. But, you know, the one thing that's helped is, the getting rid of the early recruiting so you can identify these top players. That should help us to be able to attract these top kids to Syracuse. So we're going to know who they are. We're going to get after them. We're going to try and bring the best of the best back to Cuse.
Gary, I've always gotten the feel, and I, because of your relationship with Coach Desko and your relationship certainly with the institution, that men's and women's lacrosse at Syracuse was almost always in the same kind of stride, if you will. To that piece, how important is it then to, because I know you've had a lot of players in your program, and there are a lot in the women's program that have gone on to successful coaching careers. How important is it to keep that stride the same in both programs moving forward for the institution and for the success of both programs?
You know, our athletic director, you know, I think said it best that, you know, men's and women's lacrosse at Syracuse is a real opportunity to be successful and win championships. And that's his expectation. It's certainly mine. And I know that the new coach that comes in with the women will have that same drive and that same mission. So, you know, lacrosse is something that we can compete in at Syracuse, and we know that. And we're going to do what we can to make sure that we're at the top.
Gary, what did John Desko mean to you personally?
John is a great friend, mentor. He's been an incredible guy to look up to and to ask questions when needed when I was a young coach, and certainly a guy that knows how to win five national championships, unbelievable. And, you know, I'm still working on number one. So hopefully he can help me and look to his guidance as we move forward.
Yeah, the other thing, too, and your name came up. We were talking about this earlier in the program today. Here is another changing of the guard, if you will. We just saw it happen at North Carolina in basketball, and then, you know, last week with Duke in basketball, Gary, where programs with incredible tradition turn to alums, turn to people who are either assistants or have the investment of playing for that institution. And I think it's an exclusive club. I really do. I know it happens a lot, but man, it'd be hard to find somebody who's got the blood, the sweat, the tears, the success, the journey that you've written with Syracuse to feel more about that program than you would.
Well, I think it's such an important part of recruiting at Syracuse is to have somebody that is invested in the program as a former player, coach. It's just, you know, it makes it that much easier to attract kids and young talent to come when they know that their coach has done it before them and they know what it's like. So they truly, you know what is the key aspects of Syracuse. And I think, you know, it certainly helps us, and we're hoping it really does this year.
Gary, we always talk about the conference pride aspect with this too, with the teams that do play men's lacrosse. And we saw that demonstrated in the NCAA championships. The fact that a team like Virginia and Lars Tiffany now wins it again. They won it in 19, they win it again. How does that trickle down to Syracuse? How does that trickle down from a conference perspective in terms of, number one, recruiting, and maybe even some other teams being generated from the conference standpoint in men's lacrosse?
Well, I think not only men's lacrosse, but men's and women's, the ACC dominated lacrosse this year. And it was, you know, overwhelmingly, you know, ACC was in the Final Four on both sides, three out of four teams. And, you know, it's just shows that this conference is the elite and this is the best and this is where you want to play. So whether it's Syracuse, Notre Dame, Virginia, Duke, whatever team it is, it's the ACC. So Syracuse is one of those, and we're competing for the top kids.
All right, I want to close, at least from my end, on this. You have seen this sport grow. We talked about it today and a little bit yesterday. Now, from our perspective, we've seen it obviously emerge with the network, and we've talked with you about that before. Mark said that earlier in the show that on his radio program that he does on SiriusXM, the two sports that he's gotten, what would you say, Pac, as many calls this year as in the last 10 years, right?
Yeah.
About lacrosse and softball. Gary, is a guy who has coached it, played it, has a business interest in it, is this sport ascending as much as we think it is nationally?
It is. It's just not as large as we think it is yet. You know, like some people, the fastest growing, but you're the fastest growing because you're relatively small. But the great news is we're getting there. You know, we are growing. We're getting bigger. And it's going to, as long as that continues, we will become a major player in pro sports down the road. And it'll elevate the level of college play when you're going into a major pro sports opportunity after college. And I think hopefully that'll happen. And I know the PLL is doing a great job. And if that continues, maybe one day kids will graduate from college and they'll go into a pro career and become millionaires. And that would be an awful lot of fun.
Coach, congratulations. I know it's a lot of work, but I know you're looking forward to it. And I think a lot of Syracuse fans are too.
Thank you very much. I am looking forward to it. It's going to be a blast, and you know, it's just fun to be out coaching and on the road again and back doing what I do. Thank you, guys.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Nicole Auerbach will join us coming up here in about 40 minutes or so to talk about all this college football playoff expansion stuff, which you'll also hear later this afternoon, beginning at 4 p.m. on SiriusXM Channel 84, which will be a major, major topic.
And at 7 o'clock, there'll be an ice cube and a glass with brown water because it's Friday night.
And I'm having a steak.
I'm
going to have a steak and some brown water. Tonight. That's what I'm doing.
Got it. All right. I bet some of you don't realize just how many national championships the ACC's won this year, Pac. There have been a few. And we're going to hit this list here because with the Florida State playing for one yesterday, remember, we still got three teams left in the Super Regionals and a little bit of track and field to go to out in Oregon. The ACC has picked up some things here, both collaboratively with teams and individually. And let's kind of start with the individual because we touched on Emma Navarro at Virginia. She leads the list here. Women's singles NCAA champion. Second time in UVA history. Danielle Collins won it twice. Emma Navarro, very impressive, Pac. Very impressive.
Well, we had her on the show this week while you were hodgepodging with the oil companies, and there's Major Tom, her dog, or dad's dog. Everybody's surprised. Everybody loves Major Tom, but Emma was great, and she said, yeah, I'm thinking about maybe going pro, but, man, I'm having such a great time at the University of Virginia. So, again, she'll figure that out one way or the other, but very, very impressive, not only on the court, but also when she joined us on the show.
It was not only a singles championship for North Carolina, there was all for Virginia, there was a doubles championship for North Carolina on the ladies' side. McKenna Jones and Elizabeth Scotty joined us yesterday on the program. They were fantastic and also part of this parade of national champions for the ACC.
And an interesting combination because McKenna got COVID. Guess what? Jeez, I said yesterday, might be the most positive COVID story I heard. These two hooked up. Yeah. And the rest is history. They've got the hardware, and there's the photo for it.
Yep. Boston College won the women's lacrosse national title and did it in dramatic fashion behind the play of Charlotte North, who then later said she'll come back, and that's great news for BC and bad news for everybody else because she is a machine. And Acacia Walker-Weinstein's national championships. It was a sweep for the ACC because, as we just had talked with Gary Gatepack, Lars Tiffany and Virginia were the winners on the men's side.
Yeah, he said the ACC flat out dominated the sport with both the men and the women, and that was proven here just a couple weeks ago. Again, Lars Tiffany, an amazing run, right? Just unbelievable. Yeah. Had 2-3 weeks off, kind of regrouped, got ready to roll, and the rest is history.
A couple of more individuals to be recognized. Big Atlanta Falcons fan, Turk Pettit, won the NCAA Individual Championship in men's golf out in Arizona. His first tournament win since his freshman year. So the senior saved the best for last here. Amazing.
Played great. Really played great. And sent out our man Larry Penley in historic fashion as well. Another legendary coach that decided, you know what, it's time to chill and grill. And good for Turk and good for Larry.
Yep. Notre Dame won the fencing national championship. That's why Pac has the mask on the set. The Irish, 11 national titles in fencing. And we got to go to one of these. We have got to go to one of these, Pac.
I said that a year and a half ago. I'm just waiting for Jack Swarbrick to invite us. Jack's been worrying about trying to figure this college football playoff thing. Now that he's got that knocked out, he can just send us an invite to the next fencing match there at Notre Dame because we're in.
Yeah.
We're in.
That's right. Yep, we'd be in. Seemingly, we talk about Notre Dame winning fencing and North Carolina winning field hockey. And the Tar Heels did that again this year. Karen Shelton and North Carolina winning their 9th national championship, their 3rd straight. Just an amazing game with Michigan, by the way. And, of course, Aaron Mattson delivered the goods on the script, the game winner.
She's coming back for more. Let me tell you. They're going to be a problem. And when Karen Shelton gets that 3rd national championship field hockey stick, we're going to put it right here with the other two that we got. Those back scratchers. Those things are great.
Yeah. One more individual title, and that was in wrestling. North Carolina's Austin O'Connor won the 149-pound national title out in St. Louis. They had a great event there, and O'Connor who later was with us on the show, becomes the first Tar Heel to win a national title since 1995. These guys were fun to talk about. Mm-hmm. Virginia also a women's swimming and diving national championship for the Wahoos. Been quite a year at Virginia, by the way. Their first national championship in that sport.
Wes, you know, you just rattled through a bunch of individual and team championships, and look how many we were on the cusp of having. I mean, we didn't mention anything with soccer, and the league basically dominated both sides and was so close to winning one. Florida State yesterday in softball is another one. You know, we could have added to that list. This could have been a crazy spring, but it was really impressive to begin with. But again, congratulations to all the teams and individuals that brought home the hardware. Well done. Great job. Yeah.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.